It's Friday, which means it's time for our good friend Arash Madani. He's our Sportsnet CFL insider, a veteran of many Calgary Stampedes himself. Hello, Arash.
Patrick, happy Stampede to you.
A happy Stampede. I know you're 2,000 kilometers away, so it's not quite the same. But
believe me, I wish I was 2 kilometers away.
I know. We wish you were here. You would do it well. Knowing you, you'd do it very
well. I'm not good at much at life, but the idea of Stampede, I'd be very good at.
Yeah, I think you would be. My friend, it's been an absolute nightmare start to the season if you play the quarterback position in the Canadian Football League. Five games in the books, five quarterbacks have gone down, and yesterday's quarterback injury did not look good. After such an unbelievable start to his season, Drew Willey of the Bombers lay on the ground for a long time before leaving that loss to Hamilton. Do we have an update with what's happening right now in Winnipeg?
Well, officially, Pat, no. I mean, they're calling it day-to-day, and then he's continuing to be evaluated, and not until Monday will the Bombers have an official announcement. I think in large part it's a couple of things. One, they want to go through all the proper protocols to make sure Willie's okay, that it's not just a concussion. And the other is to see what the league's decision is going to be on any kind of supplemental discipline and, you know, what they're going to do moving forward. I suspect on Monday we're going to find out that, you know, the Bombers have been very cryptic in their new regime with this whole hockey upper body, lower body injury stuff. But I'll suspect that they will announce that he did suffer a concussion, Drew Willey. And that was scary. That was one of the scarier things you're going to see when a quarterback gets shattered like that, helmet to helmet, and lays on the turf for quite some time.
And again, just one of the CFL's brightest stars, and it was helmet to helmet. It was Hamilton's Adrian Tracy who knocked him down. This is the kind of stuff that for years now we've been talking about. They need to get this stuff out of football, and different rules have been instituted to try and get it out. So what gives here? I mean, how come another helmet to helmet hit?
Well, look, there's a couple of concerns here. One, there was no flag thrown on the play, which is, you know, mind-boggling. This is the stuff the NFL's been trying to get out of its game. I was in touch with a trainer in the CFL today. He was just blown away that there was no flag. This on the heels of no flag being thrown on the Dan LaFever injury, which appeared to be helmet-to-helmet, and then later a fine came out. So are we protecting the quarterbacks or are we not? And through 2 weeks, Pat, it doesn't appear that's the case. Then the play itself. So Taylor Reed has Willie locked up. He basically has him in the grasp. Awfully close to calling it a sack. I understand why the officials didn't. Truthfully, man, I don't blame Adrian Tracy. I don't think Adrian Tracy went into that play during that play wanting to launch himself at the quarterback. And let's remember where the Ticats were in this situation. Tracy was playing week two because the starter, Eric Norwood, is on the sixth game injured. The guy who replaced Norwood last week was Sam Scott, a kid they'd released, brought back, and then sat this week. Tracy's going full bore because he's trying to earn a job, win a job, stay employed. And, you know, things happen very fast, etc. But for that to happen, for the launch to happen, for the helmet-to-helmet to happen, and no flag be thrown, Pat, that's beyond irresponsible.
Yeah, I don't understand how there was no flat. Like, I get it, things happen, it's a rough sport, you're never going to be totally able to eliminate anything.
Right.
But how is a flag not thrown on that play? That's the one that I don't understand. Like, it was
blatant. And then, meanwhile, there were over 300 yards of penalty flags thrown last night.
Yeah.
And down goes a franchise quarterback, and nothing.
Yeah, it's incredible to me. And I mean, for Winnipeg, I mean, Brian Brohm comes in, tough spot for him to come into, but doesn't play all that well. And all of a sudden, Hamilton's putting up 52 points on the Bombers. Brian Brohm, I mean, look, Brian Brohm's a former high-end quarterback in NCAA Div 1 football at Louisville, and you know, has seen time in the NFL as well. It's not like we're talking about a guy who isn't accomplished. So what do we think? What do we know about Brian Brohm in terms of him being the guy while Willie's out?
Well, that's the resume, and he's also got a CFL resume. He was in Hamilton, ironically enough, before he came to Winnipeg. I was actually speaking to somebody last night who was in the quarterback's room with the Tiger Cats when Brohm was there, and Brohm kind of, you know, flippantly one day said, I haven't gotten better since high school. And then you kind of watch two pick sixes happen. You're like, yeah, you don't say. But Mike O'Shea, the head coach of the Bombers, was not pleased with how the team responded when Brom came in. It almost felt like, you know, you're going to get this. There's going to be a deflating moment. All the shoulders are going to slump. But he felt it felt like maybe the team was using that as an excuse to not play. The defense got torched again in particular. The offense was really out of whack. So moving forward, it's going to be Brom's show. The reason why Robert Marv got in for very few plays is because Brom takes not only the number two snaps in practice, but O'Shea said, look, moving ahead, we don't know when we're going to get Drew Willey back. We have to make sure this guy can go out there and do as well as he can, evaluate, and, you know, make sure he's going to be ready for week three if need be. So I have a hard time believing they're going to start Marv, you know, week three, Pat. To me, this is going to be Brian Brom's show for at least a game if Willie can't go. And that's the other thing. I mean, there's two things with the Willie injury. One, you hope he's okay. But two, you hope they don't rush this thing. You know, this is so beyond football with everything that we know with brain injuries and CTE and the long-term effects and the damage and all that kind of stuff. Let's just say, you know, hopefully they put the brakes on a little bit. I get they're hosting a Grey Cup this year, but there's a little more than just a football season on the line here.
Arash Madani's with us. He is our CFL insider, joins us every Friday here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. So the quarterback storyline has been the one that has dominated so far throughout the regular season. There's no unknown in Saskatchewan. We know about Kevin Glenn. This is what he does. But you do have some intel on Matt Nichols, who's going to be taking over for Mike Riley in Edmonton.
Yeah, I made some calls this week, Pat, for this segment. And I wanted to talk to former teammates of Matt Nichols. You know, the Eskimos have a bye week this week. And you never really get the full story with present teammates because they're just going to say the right things. So I talked to a couple of guys who played with him in the past when Nichols was a starter there. And I said, you know, what do you get with this guy? And the prevailing sentiment was, first and foremost, he's a confident dude. Right? He may not have the same skill set as Mike Riley, but he's not going to go in there scared, which is a huge part of this thing. Because when you're a quarterback, you have to have the confidence, the belief to check out of things at the line of scrimmage if you don't like what you see. So Nichols, I've been told, you know, by some former teammates, he's not your normal backup that's scared to do that or afraid to make a mistake. And you don't have to shrink the playbook all that much. He knows what's out there. He knows how to execute it. Is he mobile? Yes. Is he Mike Riley with his feet? No, but that's okay too. Does he have a rocket launcher? Well, no, but he's got the gunslinger mentality, and he likes to throw the ball. So when you have a dude who's not scared, who's going to be willing to run the offense and check out of things, and you know, the biggest advantage is that he's a confident guy who's going to go out there and won't feel like a backup. You may just be okay.
Yeah, and I've always liked the way Nichols has played. I mean, again, he's not explosive. He's not necessarily as dynamic as Riley, but man, he's an accurate passer, and I think that he moves the ball between the 20s nicely. And, you know, if he can get a little bit more confidence, I think he can start punching some things in from the red zone too.
Well, the biggest thing too is their run game needs to improve from week one. Let's remember, they lost John White. He tore his Achilles in camp. And so now you have Chad Simpson back there. So offensively, and this is the other issue the Eskimos are facing right now, offensively, and I know it's easy to say, take a Darius Bowman out of the mix, what's left, but take a Darius Bowman out of the mix, what's left? And, you know, from a game breaker standpoint, from a guy who can change a game standpoint, they need a little bit more there. So we'll see if somebody can emerge. A lot of the emphasis, and this is what you'd expect from an Eskimos team with the GM and head coach they have, is on the defensive side of the football. I think they're going to make a shuffling of the deck on their offensive line. I think interior-wise, they got to get better. But yeah, they need to improve in a number of areas, and it's not just because of the quarterback.
What's happening in Montreal? Stamps and Alouettes tonight. Do we have any idea who's starting at quarterback for the Owls tonight?
Well, they've apparently told the team, and everyone's keeping it very hush hush. I wasn't able to get to the bottom of it, Pat. But I think we're going to see Brandon Bridge, the Canadian. I think we're going to see Rakeem Keto, who's the backup, and I think what we're going to see is a very limited playbook for both of those guys. I mean, they split reps in practice throughout the week. This is not the entire playbook that Jonathan Crompton was running towards the end of last season, throughout, you know, the preseason. And, you know, ultimately, the reason why Montreal really didn't go bring in a name guy is because there aren't a lot of name guys left out there. You know, Saskatchewan went and brought back Tino Cinceri, but, you know, from in terms of quarterbacks on the street, somebody made the joke to me, hey, the two best quarterbacks in the organization are the receivers coach and the running backs coach, Calvillo and Dinwiddie. So they're going to go out there with two inexperienced guys, and I'm assuming we're going to see gadget plays. I think they're going to throw everything in the kitchen sink out there, from end-arounds and reverses and wanting to run the football. You know, Tyrell Sutton, this is the time you want Brandon Whitaker, right? And Brandon Whitaker is in Toronto.
Yeah.
So I'm intrigued to see from an offensive call sheet standpoint just how many different kind of bells and whistles we're going to see from Turk Schoenert calling the plays today.
And on the other side, you were making the point about the Stampeders, and we know how well they've done in terms of the Canadian draft. And because of that, they can make up a pretty conventional roster. Whereas because other teams maybe don't draft as well as Calgary, they kind of have to do some less conventional and more experimental things with their ratio, right?
Yeah, well, look. What do we know Canadian players to be? We know them to be line of scrimmage guys, right? So now the trend has become with many teams, they go with two American offensive linemen. The Stamps just have the conventional one, the left tackle, and the other four offensive linemen are Canadian. You know, Edwin Harrison's the left tackle, Fetterkiel's on the right side, their draft picks are in the middle. Then you have the defensive line, where it's Quinn Smith, their draft pick from Concordia, you know, Junior Turner from the great Bishop's University Gators program. And so six of your starters, and you only have to start seven Canadians, six of them are right there on the line of scrimmage. And you look at it, and it's in large part because of how well they draft. And so, you know, one of the reasons, and we talked about this the other day, one of the reasons you're seeing so many Americans on offensive lines is because you don't want to pay for vets to be around. But because the Stamps have been able to bring guys through the system so effectively, they can lose a Canadian here or there, just the way they lost the Jones kid to the New York Giants, and the show goes on. And that's what's happened there. I don't want to get too inside baseball on this, but that's the makeup of how you use your Canadians is just so integral to how your football team works.
Just a few more with Arash Madani every Friday as our Sportsnet CFL insider. Red Blacks pulled out a really, really exciting win in week one. So they're 1-0. They have their first ever road win in franchise history. And they're here's maybe the most important thing. They're one of the few teams that has a healthy quarterback. They take on the BC Lions, who for now have a healthy quarterback. We don't know how he's going to play in his first regular season action since week 11 of last year. What can we expect from the Red Blacks in their home opener against BC tonight?
Well, here's what intrigues me, Pat, is that Jock Sanders, who was at the Stamps in training camp, the Red Blacks signed him. They obviously have Chris Williams that they gave all that money to in the offseason. They've activated Sanders right away. So from a special team standpoint, you know who your returner is. How will Jock Sanders be used, you know, in space and trying to free him up to do things, and how much of a special teams threat may he be? Two, they activate Malik Jackson, the American linebacker. So that gives them some depth there that they really haven't had since trading Jasper Simmons to the Stamps. Here's what I've been told in Ottawa, though. Yeah, they got that win over Montreal last week, and everybody was excited. They were a little too excited, not just that night, but throughout the week. You know, you haven't done anything yet. And one of the things about an expansion team, especially after coming off a two-win season, is you have to instill a culture and you have to change a culture. And you have to change a culture with a lot of guys that a lot of teams didn't want. That just winning a football game isn't enough. You got to go win the next one and the next one and improve and get better. And so they're learning these things. And, you know, that in part is why this year on their coaching staff, they brought a couple of veteran coaches who used to be players to try and teach that, have the guys learn that. And you got to walk before you run, and these guys are going to have to learn that just a road win is one step on the journey. You haven't accomplished anything yet, And as an organization, some of these young players still have to grasp that. So it'll be interesting to see from a personnel standpoint how that all shakes down, and then ultimately how they handle a little bit of success and then some more adversity.
Final thought for you, my friend. This pass interference thing is certainly going to be with us for a while longer. We saw Mike O'Shea of the Bombers challenge what should have been PI. There is no overturn. Then on the other side, Kent Austin loses it on the sidelines when the Tiger Cats are nailed for one. Why does this remain so contentious?
Well, it's because, look, there's just so much change going on in such a short period of time, Pat. And it almost feels as if a lot of people don't know how this is going to shake down. Then you get into a game situation, you're like, what's happening here? I was told in the rules committee meeting, it was an 8-1 approval on reviewing pass interference. And then when it came to the offensive PI, well, publicly they said they wanted to get defensive cleaned up before attaching offensive. There was actually the conversation came up, should we review offensive PI on touchdowns? And nobody really wanted to say or deal with anything here. We talked about it earlier. When you have more than 300 yards in penalties in a game, that's not good for anybody. It disrupts the flow. It's choppy. It's stop and start. And the PI thing is so subjective because by letter of the law, by rule, almost every play is PI. After 5 yards, the ball in the air, any kind of contact, pass interference. So how can you call, when there's contact, it's got to be PI, and it wasn't. And so if you're going to, review something that's subjective, it has to be black or white. And it hasn't been. And that's where the frustration is. And that's why going back to the rules committee, everyone was so excited to pass this 8-1, except didn't realize how it was going to actually be executed on the field. And now the way it's being, executed on the field is not making anybody content with what, was approved back in the spring.
You're the man, as always, Arash. Twice this week we had you on, but there's a lot going on in the Canadian Football League right now. Appreciate it, pal. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, brother.